Hello and welcome back to Unsprawling, the fourth episode this week, because it is day four of the longest hearing in Calgary's history. We're talking about RCG upzoning this week and next week, and who knows, maybe the week after that too, given that council is now having to kind of juggle this public hearing around other important meetings that are happening. I'm your host, Alex Williams, and I'm joined by a few great panelists and co-hosts today. We've got Millennial Moron here. You can say hi.
Hey, how's it going? My co-host is here as well today.
So cute. That is, like, you actually have, like, a sincerely adorable cat. I'm very glad he's here to join us. We've also got Rob Tremblay with us.
Hey, how's it going?
And Jen Hall is here as well, a fellow urbanist.
Hi, everyone.
So today we're going to talk about a few interesting things. I think it was kind of an interesting day for the hearing, though I think the next few days might get even more interesting, given that our four panels are kind of dwindling a little bit. So far, what we've done is we've rotated for and against and for and against, for and against, but we know more people against signed up to speak, and so we're going to start seeing just against, against, against. And so we'll see how that bears on my mental health as I continue to consume all of this. I want to talk about the panelists that we did like, the speakers that we liked today in front of council. We're going to start with some of Rob's highlights here, if you want to go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. So I think we were all talking just in the preamble, just how, you know, as this hearing's gone on, and this might already be getting close to, you know, one of the longest, certainly the longest I've ever experienced. I feel like it's getting harder and harder to remember, like, specific people with specific moments. It's all kind of blending together. But there was one speaker that I did see this evening. I was able to make it out in person for a couple hours to be in the chamber. And I believe her name was Christy Page. And she had this really great slide where it kind of had, like, a person, like a silhouette over their life. So it was, you know, like, kind of a young girl, then, like, a teenager, and then, like, kind of, you know, like a yuppie, then, like, a mom, and then a grandma. And then it just showed, like, here's all the different kinds of, you know, housing types that might work for that person, you know, in these different stages of their lives. And she was saying, you know, it's weird that we build our neighborhoods, you know, kind of in almost like monocrops of different housing forms. So it kind of forces you to, you know, keep moving throughout your life, and you don't really, you know, don't have the opportunity to kind of put down roots the way that you might if you could kind of, you know, move within your neighborhood a little more, you know. And not that everybody has to stay in their neighborhood. There's lots of good reasons to move, and it can, you know, be fun to live in different parts of the city. But, you know, why do we force people to? That's a little bit strange. So, you know, I think this is something we all kind of know and kind of, you know, subconsciously. But it's, you know, it's always nice with these public hearings to see things that are, you know, just kind of, you know, things we deeply know, but just see them kind of crystallized so well into kind of an image and presentation.
Yeah, and I think with the idea of RCG upzoning, being able to change your property as you age, I know Christy in her presentation mentioned maybe, you know, someday I'll add a backyard suite where I can live with my husband and maybe one of my kids takes over the home or something, you know, like this kind of like very local mobility and access and community building aspect that I think is huge. I know that's been mentioned multiple times. I know in my brother's little presentation to council, he mentioned growing up that we lived a block away from the care home that my grandfather wound up dying in, right? And being able to go and visit him before he died because he was right there. Nobody had to drive us there, didn't have to make any special arrangements. It was easy, right? You were able to have that community. Jen, what are your highlights of the day?
Yeah, I had a couple. This one was a little more on the sillier side, I'd say. It was a man that he's born Dutch, but is clearly lived in Canada for a long time. His accent is strong, but he was befuddling to council to the degree that they more than one were asking questions to see if they could suss out what side he was truly on.
Yeah.
And his story, he was such a charming guy. Like, you could tell that they let him go on longer than I think typical because he was a good storyteller. And in the end, which counselor was it? Just straight up said, I've got a simple question. It was the last question of the day. Yeah. Are you for or against? And he ended up saying against, which was a heartbreaker. But
because he kind of he felt like he was almost there.
Yeah, it was right on the edge. I definitely want to rewatch
that
one. And not to jump in too much, hopefully I'm not jumping the line, but what was interesting too is his career, like he was kind of like a real estate developer, like he had this really interesting kind of cowboy way where he started out like kind of flipping houses. I don't know if that was even a term in the era he was talking about. And then he said he was building duplexes in Cochrane. And so what was interesting is, you know, he was against, like that was his position, but like he was really enabled by being able to build different kinds of housing forms. Like he was talking about how he had built what he kind of jokingly admitted was an illegal basement suite in I think it was Tuxedo Park at one point. So like he's been really building housing all over the place, but he wants to, he's against the rezoning.
If anyone hasn't like been actively watching this and you're just watching this recap to like keep up with things, this is one worth watching. I'll put a link to the public hearings channel and you can go back. He's the last speaker of the night. You can scroll through. He's this elderly man wearing a green sweater and definitely worth a watch because it's thoroughly entertaining. And make sure you watch the counselors ask him questions as well, because it gets even better. You had another one, Jen. What was your other highlight?
Yeah, it was definitely way earlier in the day. A gentleman named Greg, we couldn't sort out his last name in time for this, but he was a lawyer from California. And he was essentially giving a cautionary tale of, hey, you know, if we don't do this, it didn't happen in the area I was living in, California, and it did not turn out well. Very, very passionate about it. And the counselors were very interested in his perspective because he worked directly with clients that were impacted by these decisions. And it's a different, it's getting an example of a different city to maybe get a sense of what could happen in California.
Yeah, and what could happen if we don't do this? Because they're asking a lot about what is going to happen if we do this? What have we seen in other places? But it's important to remember that there are a lot of places who haven't done this when maybe they should have done this. And you missed the boat. What about you, Millennial Moron? Tell us a couple of your highlights.
I love when people bring specific information to light. And I think, to me, the standout presentation today was, I don't recall his name, but he gave a presentation about a neighborhood that was already blanket zoned for mixed use. And he gave a lot of information about what it looks like now, how it developed over time, and how you see, you know, even though this is a zoning form that's much less restrictive than what's being proposed, you know, there's a lot more options with mixed use than there is with RCG, but you still saw a mix of basically all housing types in a way that was, you know, harmonious and contextual, and everything from, you know, new single detached still being built up to multifamily housing and I believe some commercial use mixed in there as well. And to me, that was a very, very good example of, you know, the nightmare scenario that everyone is worried about, where, you know, the person who thought that there was going to be 48 cats in a house and 100 fireplaces. And, you know, it really turns out that people will build a neighborhood that works for them if you give them the opportunity to do so. I think given that that's, you know, not just an example, it's an example in Calgary that's been around for a while. I think it's really, really hard to refute that in the sense that, you know, things aren't going to completely go to hell. It's just going to be a different looking neighborhood that can change over time if you give it the freedom to do that.
Yeah, it can really reinvigorate a neighborhood. He talked about mix, not max, right? Like, it's not like with RCG, you're not going to get 75 dwellings or units per hectare every single time, right? That's just not how it's going to work. Some developers will say, well, somebody's looking for a duplex or somebody's looking for a single family home, we're going to see a mix of these things. It's not always going to be built fully to the max of what is allowed, even if that lot is like a corner lot, it's a big corner lot in, you know, right by transit. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's definitely going to be completely maximized. And on the mixed point, there were a few people who actually who were complaining that there wasn't enough mixed use in their LAPs. But that's something that that we're going to get into in a little bit here, talking about the LAPs. You had another one you wanted to mention, one that I think we all thought was absolutely fantastic. Who was this other one?
Oh, that was the planning student who was just finishing up his undergrad and was going on to do a master's degree, and he was moving to Winnipeg because it was too expensive for him to continue living in Calgary. And, you know, his presentation was good, obviously, but I thought the way he handled questions was very, very impressive. And apparently it was his first time at council. So it was quite remarkable how, you know, confidently and in a well-informed way, and really didn't fall into any kind of rhetorical traps, and just kind of stuck to the main core of what he was saying. I was very, very impressed with him.
Yeah, it was fantastic the way he handled the questions that came at him from the counselors. Because I'm kind of finding, we lost Millennial Moron. He'll be back. I'm kind of finding that the counselors now, they're kind of leaving the just asking questions of people and more kind of entering almost a debate with each other through questions, right? They're trying to use this as a way to gather information that will be helpful to their debate. But I think the way that Quinn is his name, I believe, the way he handled those questions, he didn't really give them anything to use against him. He was just kind of like, this is my position, this is why, and I'm sticking to it. Like, here it is. I thought that was fantastic. Now, something that we want to talk about is affordability. Rob brought this topic up in our conversation beforehand. Rob, if you could quickly kind of highlight your thoughts here and then kick off this discussion with the three of us here.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd say one of the top themes amongst opponents has been to, you know, highlight that, you know, if you tear down or if you redevelop what's often described as, let's say in quotes, an affordable bungalow, then you'll end up, you know, with new units, which are, you know, for sake of being new, will be, not necessarily affordable by, you know, certain definitions. So, you know, lots of people say, oh, you take down a $700,000 bungalow and you replace it with four $700,000 row houses. You know, what's the point? And I think what gets missed often, and I was happy to see someone speak to it today, was, you know, right now, the only thing that's legal to replace that bungalow, if it is to be torn down, is a single detached home, which will be much, much more expensive than any of those individual row houses, you know, probably looking at, you know, a million or more in that case. So it's a weird example because I think it makes kind of an intuitive level of sense. But then, you know, when you think about, oh, well, if we continue just with R1 zoning, what will that mean for all these homes that are to be redeveloped? And I think it's a much less affordable situation than the alternative.
Yeah, 100%, because those will get turned into more single family homes, which is already happening. It's happening a couple blocks away from me already. And I think it's important to compare new housing stock with new housing stock, not old housing stock with old house, or not new housing stock with old housing stock, right? Because you kind of lose the plot there a little bit. And I think what's so important to remember with the RCG upzoning is this is an act for our future. This is something that is going to help us down the line. If we had made this decision 30 years ago, we wouldn't be in the same situation that we're in now. Jen, I'd like to hear some of your thoughts on this topic.
Yeah, it's definitely every time people have been mentioning, you know, oh, it's not going to pan out, things are still going to be expensive, I kept thinking, but it's everything will equally be more expensive. So it's still, I feel like it's still coming out in the wash in some way, you know, maybe slightly less more expensive. So yeah, I think I'm glad that Robbie, you talked through those details, because it reflects kind of the itch I was hoping to scratch in my mind of like, this doesn't, the math isn't mathing here. I still don't understand how it's not helpful.
So, yeah, well, yeah. And especially like you replaced one $700,000 home with four $7,000 homes. That sounds like progress to me. Even sure. though, yeah, I agree. I agree with what everybody, a lot of people who are against this have talked about building like subsidized housing and stuff. And I think we can take a yes and approach to that. What about you, Millennial Moron? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's kind of a red herring, these examples that they give of, you know, the new townhomes are more expensive than whatever bungalow was torn down. The thing is, as property values increase in an area, it's going to become ripe for redevelopment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, keeping it as single detached only, it doesn't stave off that process forever, right? I mean, there you can build quite a large form housing on a single detached lot. It's really just about, you know, how many doors it has. And so if it's going to be redeveloped, it will eventually be redeveloped into a giant, gaudy, single-family detached infill, which is going to be multiple millions of dollars. And the other thing is, part of what is making these infill multifamily homes, or like the multiplexes, so expensive is that we've created an artificial scarcity of where you can build them.
Yeah.
Right. As of 2022, something like 62% of Calgary is still zoned for single detached only. And so not only are there, you know, it's fairly scarce what parcels you can build on, but if they need to rezone it, then, of course, as we've heard many times, it's going to take a lot of time to do that. It adds cost to the process, especially the cost of carrying a property for several months to go through that rezoning process and to take on that uncertainty in the project. And that flows through into the final price, right? Whereas if you make it allowable to build it anywhere, you know, it's not someone who has a property that's likely to be rezoned that can demand a premium on the land when they sell it. It's people can go to wherever they think they will get the best price even prior to the development process. There's yeah. actually someone yesterday who was saying, and he was speaking in opposition, but he was saying, you know, we shouldn't be doing this piece by piece. We should be doing it, you know, along a full side of a block, corner to corner, if we're going to build row housing, or, you know, redevelop a half block or a full block. And, you know, I completely agree. And I think that's actually a really good argument in favor of blanket rezoning, is that it makes it easier to do that larger scale, more efficient redevelopment. And you could have, you know, a block of row houses, or it would enable other more affordable housing forms. Like you could take an entire block, turn it into row housing with green space in the middle and create it as a co-op housing development or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is almost impossible to do with the parcel by parcel rezoning process that we're doing now.
Yeah.
So to me, I think this idea that, of course, you know, it's not as affordable now versus buying a bungalow to buy one of these new build row homes. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, but it's not as though we can envision the prices as being totally separate from the regulation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you bring up something really interesting about that too, about, you kind of got creative there. You said, well, if you had like this amount of space to work with, you could do some sort of co-op housing thing. You could move things around a little bit. You could change what it looks like a little bit. And you could build almost like take a block and build kind of a community of townhomes or row homes, which I think is complicated by just like, you know, land consolidation, right? A lot of things have to work in favor for you to get, you know, buy up a whole block of homes. But I do think what RCG allows for so well is that choice, is, you know, that release from that restrictive zoning that we've been living with. And that allowance for us to think more creatively about our communities, about how we do green spaces, about how we do public spaces. And so, I hope to see more of that. And as we're talking about this, this leads in well to LAPs, local area plans, which came up a lot today, especially in council questions. I noticed Demong and Chabot particularly like to ask a lot about LAPs. Does anybody have any insight into why that might be, like any speculation or any special insider knowledge why they're asking this so much? Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I think the simple answer is it's an alternative. It's seen, it's being presented as an alternative to what's before us. You know, I think an interesting thing, too, is on LAPs is we've had a couple people speak, opponents say that, you know, if we do the blanket rezoning, there's no point to doing LAPs anymore. And I was happy to see Councillor Penner push back on that a little bit, because it's kind of a ridiculous statement, right? You know, there's a lot of other housing forms that are, and use forms that are, if that's a phrase, yeah, that are beyond what RCG is, right? Like, you know, we can have townhomes, yeah, row houses, duplexes, single detached homes, but, you know, there's also apartment buildings, mixed use developments, you know, commercial developments, and those things are all also part of LAPs. So there's still a lot to go into LAPs. This move is not eliminating zoning, you know, we could discuss the merits of that also, but like, that's not at all what's before us. Anyway, maybe I went a little off track there.
But no. Yeah, that, it's been interesting. I think you're exactly on point. I think what you're saying, like, it's a yes and thing, right? It's like, we can just make this the base district and then say, okay, so everything's RCG at least. And then from there, what are our mixed use spaces going to look exactly like? What are our main streets going to look like? Jen, do you have any thoughts or comments on kind of what you heard about LAPs and maybe how you can see the community getting a little bit more engaged with a bit more deeper of the planning process?
Yeah, I was definitely hearing a lot of, yeah, they want to feel like they're involved and participating, and that they are, yeah, I think it's, they just want to feel like they're heard and that they're part of the process. So it's interesting, but some of that is part of what seems to be making the process of getting the higher density built faster, because the one speaker was reflecting on it. It's multiple iterations, you know, going back and forth with ideas and coming back with, can it work, can it not work, etc. So yeah, I think an overall theme with the people saying no is that the feeling of a lack of control, too fast, lack of control. So it would be be interesting to see if some people on the yes side could come with their speeches addressing that, you know, finding some talking points that help create some relief, maybe some you know, because maybe some of these fears don't need to exist, because it's actually not as bad as they think.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of solutions to a lot of people's concerns that they've been bringing forward to council. I mean, we had the guy the other day who was worried about the trash bins and the garbage and the way people are caring about their space, and he was asked, like, hey, if we can resolve this, you know, if we do more to support 311, you know, would you be on board? So I'm optimistic in that way. Millennial Moron, do you have any thoughts on the LAPs? I don't know how familiar you are or are not with these things.
I mean, I don't have a lot of special insider insight, but to me it seems like essentially people don't want to see change in their neighborhood, right? They're happy with the way things are now. They want to preserve it as long as possible. And you know, the local area plans are effectively a plan for change over time, mm-hmm, right? They are not a plan to maintain your neighborhood preserved in amber for 10,000 years. But when they see this additional change that they hadn't expected, like, you know, they can fight every change in the local area plan as it comes up. And now there's this other change, and now they're coming back to the local area plan and saying, well, you can't do this because we have this plan.
Right.
But I haven't seen anybody actually giving any specific objections as to how RCG is incompatible with any of the content of their local area plan. I don't know if any of you have heard that, but they just bring up, we have the local area plan, we shouldn't do RCG. But I can't think of any example where I've seen a community planning document that relies upon single-family restrictive zoning as a key element of the plan.
Yeah. Yeah. No, right? I've not heard of any.
Councillor Walcott brought up an interesting point where, and, you know, I'm not fluent enough in the local area plans to know if this is for all of them, but there was a specific man, I forget his name, but he was from Glendale, which recently had an LAP pass, I think, last year. And he was kind of saying, oh, well, you know, a lot of the local area plan says it's only for single detached and semi-detached developments. And Councilor Walker said, well, you know, actually it also says, you know, where appropriate, also RCG style development. So I think one way we could view this hearing is, you know, council saying, well, RCG actually is appropriate anywhere, really. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, that's something like probably we'll agree with on the call, but I think, you know, I think that's also just something that's eminently reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think all of us here are pro RCG unless somebody snuck in. But I think RCG is a great base zone district. And I think the LAPs can be designed to fit that, right? Like, we're not throwing these out. We're just saying this is the bottom now. And the bottom can look like single family housing. It can look like townhomes, row homes. It can look like backyard suites. There's a whole variety that fits into RCG, which is kind of frustrating when somebody says it's one size fits all. And I'm glad somebody, there was one speaker who brought up that this isn't one size fit all, actually. This is take what works for you and roll with it. As we lean into the last bit of the episode here, I want to hear, what are people's vibes? Like, are you feeling all right, Jen, watching this thing go by?
So far, it has been better than I thought. And maybe it's just the early days, because you mentioned that there will be more no's as time goes, and that may impact my vibes as that goes along. But so far, it's been a nice mix and really great to hear on the yes side such a mix of examples. And I've been enjoying hearing an increase of people touching on the whole lifespan of a person and the variety of housing that supports that, like that that one presentation with the pictures of the lifespan. And so, yeah, because I think it's easy for people to think about their current state and not realize, oh, there will be a day where I am not driving anymore. I cannot support taking care of my large single family home. Their kids may not want to come live with them. You know, I think this is something I don't think a lot of people want to talk about, but there's a lot of baby boomers that might have this assumption that their kids are going to come back and support them in their old age. And that may not pan out for whatever reasons, which is unfortunate. And so that day will come, and then there will be scrambling. Well, now where do I go? How will I be supported? How can I be close to family if possible? And so the RCG blanket zoning would actually really support, because that's a lot of people to be entering into an age that requires support on so many levels. So more than anything, I think they need it and they don't realize it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a great place of opportunity. Millennial Moron, what about you? How are you feeling going into the, I don't know, maybe last half of this, maybe second two thirds?
I mean, it's hard to say exactly what I think the outcome will be. I will say for sure, and, you know, this could partially be my personal bias talking, but I don't think it is. But I have not been particularly impressed with the no side compared to the yes side in terms of what they're presenting. I mean, you see the yes side coming with, of course, there's, you know, meaningful stories and heartbreaking anecdotes, but there's also a lot of people coming with data and with sound arguments and with a more holistic view of what's happening now and in the future. And when you see the no side, you hear them talking almost exclusively about the past and what their expectations were when they bought a property 30 years ago, which was that it was not going to change. Another common theme on the no side is, again, this is kind of my own interpretation of it, but I think you see a lot of disingenuous arguments for sure, where people have decided that they don't want this, and so they reach for any possible argument they can make to root against it. For example, tree canopies. They talk a lot about concern about removing trees, but then at the same time they say, oh, we've got all this stock for greenfield development, we've got all this land for greenfield, but
yeah,
do they care about trees being removed for those? Do they care about, you know, clear cutting in the forestry industry? I never hear them talk about that. We hear about the drought and about how increasing lot coverage slightly for RCG on the handful of parcels that will be redeveloped is going to cause issues with water runoff and less water absorption.
Yeah.
But do they consider how putting less dense housing and all of the impermeable surfaces like roads that are required to service a new subdivision, it has a much more profound impact?
Yeah.
And, you know, I could go on and on. There's tons of examples, but it's these issues of, you know, environmentalism and social justice and whatever that they are now kind of pretending to be interested in, but only to the extent that it's in the service of blocking rezoning.
Yeah.
I don't think it really extends beyond that to, a broader desire to solve any of these problems. I think they would like the problems to not exist if it were possible, but they don't want to make the change that would be necessary to have them not exist anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll add to, like, I think a lot of them come at it honestly, like, especially from the environmental side. I know a lot of them do. But it is like I see a tree being cut near my house and I feel like this is bad. Whereas you don't necessarily always have that bird's eye view when you see the city sprawling out, right? You're not witnessing that impact, right? Maybe you drive out of the city and you see once a year that change in development. I also think the transportation arguments, the worries about cars, like, we're talking about housing people, not housing cars. And on my street, I live in one of those bungalows that could be redeveloped. But on my street, there's plenty of parking. There's lots of parking out there. And the younger and younger generations are driving less and less. So I agree with you, like, the yay side has fantastic arguments for it. So hopefully those can help us win out. What about you, Rob? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys have talked about so much interesting stuff in, like, this last 5 minutes. Two things maybe I'll just quickly jump in on. So, like, trees, I should not get started on it because I could go for probably another half an hour just on the the tree stuff. But, you know, I think one thing I've been challenged on from some friends and also kind of organizing around this is because, you know, I also often will default, well, like, you know, if you think about, the carbon sequestration in trees and the scope of a city like Calgary, like, it's not that significant, or, you know, talking about the impacts of sprawl versus the impacts of redevelopment. But I think, you know, that we can be stronger. We can make a stronger case even than that. I think the idea that redevelopment necessarily means a smaller tree canopy, I think, is just actually wrong, too. Like, one of the slides I had in my presentation to council was I showed a street that's right kind of around the corner from where I live. And it's one of the best tree canopies, I think, in all of Calgary for a block. But then I was just in Montreal to see the eclipse a couple weeks ago. And, I showed a picture from a block in the plateau of Montreal, and it had just as good trees with density that's, a lot higher than RCG, like these kind of basically like apartment buildings, but they've all got outside doors. It's cool Montreal stuff. But yeah, I think, Millennium Warren, like, everything you said is so correct, but I think it's almost besides the point too, because I think, the cool thing about trees is they grow back, and as we build new kinds of our city, we can put that tree canopy right back there if we want to and if we value it. And I think we do, clearly, yeah. given what we've heard from folks in the public hearing. As far as my vibe, yeah. I think kind of touching back on, I think, where you started at the beginning, Alex, like, the way that this public hearing's been organized so far is, I think everyone who signed up before the 15th has been organized into these kind of alternating for and against panels for the most part. You know, people miss and then they come back into panel and stuff. But so I think what I've heard is that likely we are going to enter kind of a phase of a lot of no panels. But I know, you know, there's a lot of people who are signed up, you know, specifically in the 130s that we did a Climate Hub. We did a training event, and part of our training event is just signing people up right in the call. So I think everyone who signed up kind of in that call ended up being like panel 135 or something. And I think another weird thing about this public hearing is just how long it's going on for. Like other public hearing kind of pushes that I've done, usually we do this organizing, we get, you know, maybe like 50 people for like a budget hearing, and it's like all done in like a day or like maybe maybe a day and a half. So there's not really time to like get other people over the course of the public hearing to come and, hey, you got to sign up, like come speak at the end. But I think that's clearly happening right now, you know, on both sides. Like, I think there's been like another 200 people that have signed up since the public hearing began. So I think, you know, it's what we make of it. You know, I think there is going to be a bit of an Empire Strikes Back moment, you know, over the next couple of days. But I think, you know, it's up to us to, you know, have that Return of the Jedi at the end of this public hearing. And I think we'll get it.
Yeah, I hope we will. I'm optimistic. And I'm optimistic largely because RCG has a lot of opportunity in it, right? Like it fits a lot of different housing types and styles in it while maintaining, you know, the same heights and everything. But it provides us with a lot of opportunity to have quite diverse and interesting neighborhoods, like Millennial Moron mentioned earlier on about like how you could have a whole block and you could, you know, have like almost a garden court kind of thing going on, right? If you set it up that way with these row homes, what you're talking about, trees and everything, you can really create like some beautiful, beautiful landscapes included in this added density, you know, this very slight added density. And it's an opportunity for communities to be beautiful. So I'm optimistic. I hope it goes well. Does anybody have anything that they're like, I just got to say this before we get off this call?
One other thing. So parking. So, you know, my neighborhood in Sinalta, you know, it's a really mixed neighborhood. That's kind of weird. It's the northern half has a lot of low rise apartment buildings. They're all like these kind of four floor or three floor apartment buildings. And the southern half is, you know, some single detached houses, a lot of them with basement suites. I live in one of the basement suites. You know, some infills that are starting to come in as well. The whole neighborhood's, I think, zoned to a minimum of MCG, which I still don't quite understand the difference between MCG and RCG, but I think it's kind of an RCG precursor. But you know what? There's lots of parking in the neighborhood because, you know, the transportation amenities that our neighborhood kind of enables for sake of having kind of this user base to use, you know, cycling infrastructure and use the LRT that, you know, for the last decade has been going through our neighborhood. You know, I think allows a lot of people to have, you know, just one car, as my household does, or probably no cars, as lots of the folks probably in the apartment buildings are. And yeah, like parking is not really a struggle. And I'd never really thought about it until this public hearing, how kind of weird that is. Cause so many people are saying, you know, if we have one RCG development on our block, it'll be a parking apocalypse. And
yeah,
I've probably got a dozen within 100 meters of where I live and a bunch of apartment buildings. And parking's not an issue where I am. Anyway, sorry, kind of rambled on that. But
No, that's okay. I think you bring up an important point about everybody living differently and requiring different things out of the, you know, the place where they live. And I think it's important that a variety of people can live in a community together in a variety of dwellings. So with that, I'll wrap up this day four recap of the RCG public hearing. We might still be on the first third of these recap episodes. So come back tomorrow for part five.